Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you, and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it, because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Lynn Joliker, WBUR senior producer and reporter. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well today. Thanks, Daryl. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, especially because this is your first time on the show, so I get to give you a big, hearty, The Common welcome.
Yes, thank you. This is my first time on The Common. Thanks.
Well, listen, we got you here because we've discussed housing on the show a few times. And you and WBUR's All Things Considered host and reporter, Lisa Mullins, have a housing story told from a really unique angle. It's about two Afghan families who moved into a church basement in Newburyport more than a year ago, and they've been unable to find their own housing. So
yes.
Before we get into the details of their situation, tell us a little bit about the people who make up these families.
Sure. Well, they are two very big families, I should say, right off the bat. When they came here in early 2022, or actually one family came at the end of 2021 and then the other family at the beginning of 2022, there were the two sets of parents and 15 kids. And since then, the families have grown, or one of the families grew a little bit. Baby Nadia was born just a few months ago. So there are now 16 children. So they range in age from 3 months old to 20. So the two oldest kids are actually not kids. They're young adults, 18 and 20 years old. And these families fled Afghanistan when the final U.S. troops were withdrawing in August of 2021, and the Taliban was taking over. And they had good reason to flee. Both of the fathers worked for the Afghan governments. One of them was in the military, and he worked alongside U.S. troops. So they were definitely in fear for their lives. So they fled, and they were on a U.S. base for some time, and then they ended up in Newburyport.
So, Lynn, these two families include an age range of, you know, of course, there's the parents, and then there's the children who range from 3 months old to 20 years old.
Yes.
You know, everybody's under the same roof, which I understand could be very lively. Can you talk about that?
Indeed. It is a lively scene in the St. Paul's basement. And, you know, there are kids running around. The bigger kids are in school. But when they come home in the afternoon, there are little ones running around. They have a couple of rooms set up. One is a living room with couches and coffee tables. Another smaller one is a den that they use as a TV room. And the kids, you know, play in there. When I stopped in the last time we were there, they were watching cartoons, and one of the little ones, a preschool-aged child, was rolling around singing the alphabet, very proud of having learned the alphabet song. So it's definitely, a busy scene there. It can also get tough. You know, this is a lot of people, 20 people living in one space. It's a sizable space, but still two different families basically having to live together. They might have different hours, and, you know, that can cause some difficult moments. The baby is certainly crying now, but they're making the most of it, making the best of it.
These two families have been living in this church for just over a year without being able to secure their own permanent housing. But I understand that this isn't the case for some other families who came from Afghanistan to Massachusetts around the same time. So why is this situation different?
Sure. So there are a number of factors that make this situation kind of unusual. First, you have the size of the families. Again, they're very big. Now 9 children in one family and 8 in the other, and then another family of 11 in one of the other churches. So, and they happen to have ended up in a community that is very expensive. Newburyport is a very pricey town. It's actually a small city of about 18,000 people. The median home price is around $700,000 now. There's very little rental housing there, and even smaller amount of subsidized housing, you know, or deeded affordable housing. So they ended up here, and now they've made a home there. They've, you know, really found happiness in this community. They've gotten a lot of support in the community, and the community wants them to be able to stay there. So I spoke with International Institute of New England, which is the resettlement agency that's helping these families in Newburyport. And basically, most or all of the other Afghan evacuees who've come to Massachusetts, at least for the agencies that I've spoken with, have been housed. Most of them are housed very quickly, actually, within a matter of a few weeks or a month, maybe a couple of months or so. But that was because a lot of people stepped up to offer their property at discounted rates, specifically to the Afghan citizens, because of sympathy for their plight. So people might have said, you know, I have this in-law apartment that's available, or a cottage or something like that. Or people that were existing landlords that said, you know what, I want to rent to these people and I'm going to do it at discounted rates. So that's how most of these people got housing. There were also community sponsors. Agencies like Catholic Charities work with community sponsor organizations, other faith communities or Rotary clubs that get together to sponsor a family or sponsor an individual. So there were all kinds of creative ways that these Afghan evacuees got housed in places ranging from New Bedford to Lowell to Worcester to Haverhill. But again, it was through all these different ways, not as a result of there being affordable housing. So that is really the issue here, not enough affordable housing.
I'll say it's heartwarming to hear how the community has stepped up, but what kind of help is available to them from a more official level, from a state level, you know?
Well, they did all receive assistance when they arrived. So all the Afghan evacuees got a one-time payment from the state government and a one-time payment from the federal government. And that added up to about $3,500 per person. So, for example, one of the families we featured in this one church, St. Paul's Episcopal in Newburyport, got about $35,000 for the family. That has basically been set aside for future needs, for housing mainly. But still, that doesn't go very far when you're talking about trying to, say, buy a home or something like that, or even renting. And they also get ongoing transitional cash and food assistance from the state. And I should say that the fathers are working from these two families that are living at St. Paul's. One is working for a local handyman. The other one is working as a janitor at a local hospital. And the teen boys are also working. 4 different teen boys living in that one church are working at the local market basket. They work and they contribute to their families. That is very much part of the culture. And the churches have raised a lot of money. They've raised with donations and grant that they have sort of waiting for them. If they find some sort of housing option for these families, they have raised about $350,000. That could pay for the down payment on 1 or 2 homes, but then the families wouldn't be able to afford mortgage payments for any extended period.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more from Lynn.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
And we're back. So, Lynn, you've talked about how this community has stepped up to help out these two families. What kind of solutions do they propose?
Yes. So I should mention that the person really taking the lead in all of this is Reverend Jared Mercer. He's the rector at St. Paul's. And he stepped up, and the other church leaders stepped up when this need became clear, that these Afghan citizens were going to be coming here. Massachusetts received about 2,000, and housing was needed. And, you know, he looked at his church and said, we have this huge basement. We use it for religious education classes and church gatherings, but we can offer this up as temporary housing. He offered up the church basement thinking this would be a temporary thing, maybe a few months, but did not foresee how difficult it would be to come up with permanent housing for these families. So he ended up becoming basically a de facto case manager for these families. The resettlement agencies were overwhelmed. So he was really the one, and has been the one, managing the day-to-day of all of their needs. And so he decided, you know what, there are no housing solutions out there. There's nothing available here. In terms of affordable housing, subsidized housing, they are eligible for Section 8 vouchers or public housing, but they're in line behind other people. And he's looking at creating something called resettlement homes. He says, we have so many people coming in from other countries that are forcibly displaced, and there's just not housing for them. So he says we need special housing dedicated to them or special housing resources dedicated to them. And he has sort of rallied the troops, rallied other people, worked with other nonprofit leaders, church leaders, and city officials in Newburyport. And they have talked with the state and federal government's housing officials and said, we think that you should create dedicated housing resources, special vouchers specifically for forcibly displaced people, or operating subsidies to help operate these properties over the long term. And when you hear Reverend Mercer talk about this, you realize how invested he has become in these families and how invested the community has become.
Thousands of people are connected to them in some way through school or work or friendships or, you know, whatever, and people care about them. And I think what it means to live in Newburyport has changed for people, you know, in the past year. And that this is a part of who we are.
And his eyes welled up at that point. And when we asked him about that, he said, you know, we love these families.
And how do they feel about being unable to find permanent housing?
Well, they are so grateful. You know, they want to make that clear first. They're so grateful for all of the help they've gotten here. They're happy to be safe. The kids love going to school in Newburyport. They've made friends. But it does get tough. You know, they want their own home and they want to be able to really settle here. We talked to the mom in one of the families, the mom of the newborn baby. Her name is Gulalai, and here's what she said.
They're all doing great. They like school. I'm happy for them. But since we're living in just a few rooms, two families, the basement is so tight for us. So that makes it a bit difficult for us.
So it's this mix of gratitude and, you know, certainly some struggle as well.
What's next for the two families in Newburyport?
Well, right now, it is definitely a waiting game. They're making the best of the situation. The kids continue going to school. Even the oldest ones are attending the high school and waiting and hoping to keep earning as much money as possible to save for whatever housing they will end up in. They could end up potentially in a situation where they live rent-free for a time, or they will be paying rent. That is one thing that concerns a lot of advocates who work with the Afghan evacuees, that a lot of them who have been housed are, you know, in a good situation now. But what happens when the state and federal assistance runs out? Will they be able to sustain themselves and continue paying that rent? So they hope something will happen soon, but it will take some time for any of these housing solutions to become a reality. And one of the kids, he's a young man, 18-year-old Afzal, told us that it really is a situation of being in limbo right now.
We're still thinking we haven't reached America yet. We're on the way. If we find our own home and we have a house, then we'll be relaxed that we've reached our home and now our life can start.
And thankfully, in the meantime, they have a lot of people around them who are supporting them and being great friends to them and showing them a lot of love.
Understood. Well, Lynn, thank you very much for bringing this story to us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you for having me on the show, Daryl.
For sure. That's WBUR senior producer and reporter, Lynn Joliker. And that is our show for today. Thank you so, so much for listening to The Common. Hit us up on Instagram or Twitter at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.